The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan, and my guest today is a dear friend, a wonderful man, an inspiring therapist and speaker, Howard Glasser. I'll tell you a little more about him in a couple of minutes. First, I want to remind you that the time is growing near for signing up at the last minute for our first empathic therapy conference, April 8th through 10th. In Syracuse, New York. Why Syracuse? Because it's a beautiful place, and it's only about an hour and a half from where I live, way out in the country on a lake. It's a really lovely place to come in the spring. But more importantly, we're going to have about 40 presenters, including about 15, 16 really top plenary people who will have an hour to give you a real insight into what they're doing and what they're thinking. This is going to be the cutting-edge conference of the year in our field, both in terms of its critique of what's the matter with biological psychiatry, and even more exciting in many ways, the cutting edge of empathic therapies based on the individual who's being helped rather than on the ideologies, aims, goals, and income of the helper. You can find out all about the conference on empathictherapy.org, empathictherapy.org. We are near to filling up already, and we're drawing people from all over the world. It's just astonishing how many people are coming from Asia, Africa, the Middle East, Australia, of course, but some new people from Australia. And the fourth presenter on the opening day on Friday, April 8th, will be Howie Glasser. I put Howie in real quickly in order to inspire the conference before lunch and to give people time to sort of run up to the front of the room like they're all going to want to do and try to get them to talk and go to lunch with them. Howie is known for the Nurtured Heart Approach and the book Transforming the Difficult Child, among others. He's been on CNN. He's been a consultant for 48 hours. He really does lecture all over the place. Maybe he'll tell you some of the places he's going to. Howie Glasser, come on aboard.
Hi there, Peter.
I'm really excited about having you on, Howie, because I don't know what we're going to exactly do, because I just know that you're somebody who brings out the best in folks. In fact, I was going to say at the start that I keep talking about how each one of my shows has the greatest guest. And today we not only have the greatest guest, but we have a guest who's devoted to bringing out the greatness in others.
How did I ever get to be doing that?
Tell us.
You know, that's a cute little sidebar. If you don't mind, I could tell you that. I had been doing this great work with difficult kids. That's been my life's purpose, it seems, and having been one myself. And I developed something called the Nurtured Heart Approach, and I've kept honing that for a lot of years. And then I ran into my own, probably 10 years into doing that, here I was thinking I was radically appreciative, and I was teaching, radical a recognition and appreciation. So I thought I was a fairly positive person. And I ran into a personal dilemma that had me sweating. I'm sure everybody is familiar with that kind of thing. You know, something that just takes them, you know, by the scruff of the neck. And for a week or more on end, I was waking up in the middle of the night multiple times, worried, sometimes angry, sometimes fearful, sometimes rage, whatever. But each and every night I would wake up with something many times. And at some point it was just staring me in the face. I'm not really positive. I'm not really, my default setting really is to negativity when push comes to shove, because to me that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, how are you in a tough situation? It's, you know, it's easy to be positive when things are going nice, but it's how do you remain positive in the midst of something that's staring you down? And, you know, in those moments of that realization, that lightning rod moment, I simply had this very interesting thought, because I had a young man for about a year up to that point who would come to my house and help me with my computers. And I'd be sitting there doing whatever I was doing while I was kind of giving him whatever next things I needed to be accomplished on the computer. And he helped me oftentimes by changing default settings. And, you know, I didn't know a default setting, if it fell on me, you know, really, but he'd be talking out loud and saying, oh, I'm just going into the guts of the computer and I'm going to change this and this and this, just in case you ever need to know. Changing the default setting. And in that moment, I thought, you know what? I could change my default setting. And in that same lightning rod moment, I knew that the work I did with kids, which was all I believed in, that's where my faith was that I could change it by way of using the approach on myself, the approach I developed for difficult kids, the approach I developed for teachers and parents of difficult kids. And that's what I never been so dedicated to something in my life. It's almost like I signed up for that before I came into this body, you know, before I, you know, when I was, you know, before this incarnation, because it was so absolute right as rain. So, you know, I might forget for a half an hour or half a day, but I keep coming back to this, purposeful, way of being, which is to be very clear with myself in terms of, I mean, I could tell you about the approach I use for kids and you'd get what I do with myself. And to make a long story short, that all led to, at some point, me seeing, and, you know, this is pure Howie Glasser, I like to see how far things can go. You know, but it's a different way of pushing the envelope than I did when I was a kid. It's in this matter, it's like I wanted to see how good is great. I wanted to see, well, if this level of appreciation has led to these wonderful changes over the course of these years, can I amp that up? Can I say even more appreciative things to myself? And somewhere along the line, that led to me using the word great with myself. And about a year into that, I dared not tell anybody about this because it felt so foreign to talk about greatness. And about a year into that, kind of like probably 5 years ago, I said it out loud at one of my advanced trainings to people, and I started telling them about what I'm telling you now. And I can't tell you how contagious this is. It's almost like people have greatness in their hardware, and when you tell them about it, it lights up, it awakens, and they get excited at a level I've never seen before. And this bears out with kids, my work with kids. I got lots of people out there who are talking greatness.
Well, how express kids. How an individual child
or yourself or a friend would experience this idea of, hey, I can find my greatness. Get a little more specific.
Well,
how people really get into it.
I think in any given moment when a child isn't, let's use kids for an example, when a child isn't being detrimental or being annoying or whatever, you know, gets this child in trouble, when the rules are not being broken, if we see, we're so good at seeing what's wrong with the picture. You know, I don't know if it's evolution and we had to be good at seeing what's wrong with the picture for survival. You know, we could walk into a kid's room and point to all the things that should have been done better, all the things that weren't done, and we could wax poetically about that. My point is, how well do we wax poetically about what isn't wrong, what is right? You know, we in our society, we say good job. And like if I said to you something complimentary now, Peter, I said, way to go, Peter, good job. You might not know, as brilliant as you are, you may not have any idea, any inkling what I'm talking about. So I believe when, in any given next moment, when rules aren't being broken, if we see ourselves in an empowered, a truly empowered position as kind of like editor, producer, director of the footage of these frames, these photo opportunities that are really ours.
A director of our own lives.
A director of our own lives.
Yeah.
You know, we then can take this next moment, like this next moment, and I'm going to say something to you, Peter, is that I love the quality of your introduction. I love the thought you gave to it. It tells me about your wisdom. I think that's a great quality. It tells me about how much you care about the people who are your listeners, who you prepared for this. You're organized. You put time and consideration into this. Those are all great qualities. I've been around people who don't do that, and it's not so great. You know. So you posed your questions not only in a thoughtful manner, but by way of your great listening. You're letting this be a conversation instead of the many interviews I've been on where it's like, you know, cut and dried. And if my answer doesn't fit into their agenda, you know, it's choppy. I'm sure you've been in interviews like that too.
Sure, sure.
So you're showing your brilliance. And if I want to, I could take that word brilliance and I could, you know, Photoshop it, so to speak. I could go in and look at the pixels, and I could say, "Well, here's another aspect of your brilliance. You talk to me in such a kind way. Your kindness comes through in your voice." And I could go off to another area of brilliance, and I could say something else and something else. And this is what I'm talking about. Is it's there for the taking?
Can you give an example of one of the kids you're working with or one of the trainings, and just how you would address the kid at some desperate moment in this child's life about the child's wonderful ability?
See, it's so interesting. There's so many models of parenting out there, as you well know, and I think the reason schools are having such a hard time is that a handful of kids take up so much of the resources in terms of not only money but, you know, time of staff, because they never respond to the ordinary ways of
right,
helping them in school buildings, you know, the ordinary styles of teaching, for instance.
Well, in fact, those kids are having their non-greatness addressed. The entire project of taking care of these kids in the special classes is just special in negative ways. In fact, the whole bizarre idea of calling failure special is a part of that bizarre twisting.
Oh, isn't that twisted? Yes, I couldn't agree more. And we do that in the that's on the micro the large level, the mic,
the macro
level. I knew that was the answer, and on the micro level, I just couldn't spit it out. It was that peanut butter sandwich. It was stuck in my mouth. So, on the micro level, you know, just the fact that if I'm a teacher and I have a difficult kid in the classroom, when that child's not problematic, you know, I'm going on to curriculum. I'm going on to many other things. And the last thing I want to do is say anything to that child because I don't want to dare, you know, awaken the beast. And what I'm saying is, and to match that to what you just said, is when that child does it. So it's almost as if we don't have time for that child when he's doing well. Or at most we'll say, good job, which is so unenergized. It's such pale relationship.
Right.
But when that child messes up, dare he mess up, even in small ways, we're all over him and we lean in and we get really present and we get really alive and we have so much verbiage. And that kid magnetically draws in the impression, the energetic impression, that there's so much more juicy relationship. There's so much more, in a weird way, intimacy and love flowing when things are going wrong.
Oh, I think that's one of the things that depressed parents and depressed school systems really do to kids. They get them thinking that when you're down and out, you're feeling helpless and hopeless, that's the time when we care and we have intimacy.
If you're
feeling glorious, people run from you.
Exactly. You're a star. We celebrate you when you're messing up. We're celebrating your non-greatness, as you said before. And that is the tragic reality in so many schools. And the fact that you called it depressed is brilliant because it's not just depressed patients. It's depressed schools. It's depressed institutions. I'm saying that we could actually turn that around to the advantage of those children and to the advantage of all the educators and just in general to the advantage of parents and everybody in that situation by kind of in a parallel way to the way I talked to what I complimented you on a few minutes ago. So, you know, give me an example of a kid who's causing distress.
You know, I'm thinking about one of my favorite kids from many years back who was 10 years old. The psychiatrist was about to put him on his fifth psychiatric drug, this time an antipsychotic.
Uh-huh.
And his parents just got desperate. The kid was skinny, depressed, dressed in black, was goth at age 10, wore heavy chains. And he came
That's pretty early for goth.
Yeah, it's a little early.
Let's call it early goth.
Early goth. And he comes into my office, and I've heard a little bit about him from his mother. He sits down, and we all sit down. His father sits down, and I look at him, and I say, I hear you're the kid who just attacked his last psychiatrist. That's how you ended up here. And he looks at me like, oh, my God, and his parents wince. And I say, you know, it is really, really brave to attack a psychiatrist who's bigger than you and more powerful than you. You got a lot of courage, but I really want to help you learn to express that courage without getting yourself mashed everywhere
bingo,
you go.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. that's exactly what I'm talking about. And it's like, I'll give you a really good example. There was a mother in my office. This is years ago when I had a practice, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and she just asked for, you know, can you get me in as soon as possible? I've just moved from Florida, where the girl at 13 had been hospitalized 3 times, so you can only imagine. And the mother gets in my office, and she's perseverating in the following way. She's saying the same thing over and over. I'm fried. I think she was saying, I'm so burnt out. No, she said, I'm fried. I'm fried. And she just couldn't muster anything else. You know, she finally got to somebody, and somebody was listening, And meanwhile, the girl's sitting in on the couch with her arms folded and looking the other way. And I said to this mom, I said, I hear you, fried, and I'm amazed that given how you feel, you could muster what it takes to bring your daughter in today. It shows me your level of caring. It shows me your level of concern. It shows me that you could rally in the face of being so overwhelmed. And for me to best help you, since I only do one kind of parenting, in all fairness to you and your daughter, we need to not waste any time. We need to, rather than go into all the problems and all that, you're here for a solution, and that's the only reason that would bring you there here. So let's see if I have anything worth, you know, worth doing. So let's experiment, and let's do that right away, because in the event that what I do doesn't work, I need to refer her ethically to somebody else.
Most therapists think if it doesn't work, they have to refer you for drugs.
Yeah. Well,
not another therapist.
I knew it was going to work. I was just saying that because I didn't want to hear a litany of problems, because then I would be in the same boat of celebrating the mom's negativity.
I gotcha.
So what I did was like a director, I scanned away to the girl. I looked at her and I said, you know, I did look at the chart, and I did get that she was apparently saying bad words, arguing, fussing, cussing pretty much all day, every day. That's what was described to me. And by some, however it's happened, it may be a miracle, but I think there's more to it than that. Right now, your daughter looks angry, looks frustrated, but is sitting here and not cussing and not swearing and following the rules of my office, and she's handling her strong feelings well. Frustration's a strong feeling, so she's being powerful in handling her strong feelings right this second, and because it's clear she's very frustrated for whatever reasons. And I said to the mom, so I'd like you to... And I'd like to tell you one more thing, which is I imagine when she does cuss and swear and argue, you're unhappy about that, and it's alarming to you or of concern to you. So the fact that she's not doing it now must feel wonderful. So what I'd like you to do is tell her how wonderful it is that she's choosing, give her credit, it's not her medications, because she could be cussing on medications. She could be swearing on medications. So it's her that gets the credit. And I want you to tell her how wonderful it is that she's choosing to not to not do those things and follow the rules. The mother looked at me like I was a lunatic.
Yeah, right.
But she turned to the daughter, and she couldn't quite get the words out. So I got up out of my chair, and I went over, and I looked at her. I said, look at your daughter. Tell her what's in your heart, because I know this is very meaningful to you, because this is what you wanted in the first place. You want your daughter to be respectful even when she's frustrated. People get frustrated. You know, you're frustrated and you're not swearing. That's I consider that so great in you, and so tell your daughter how great that is, that she's doing that. And this woman eventually, with my help, said exactly that to her daughter. And her, the mother was really emotional about that, as you can imagine. First of all, she hadn't given this kid a compliment in forever. Second of all, it wasn't natural to her at all. But she said it, despite that. And the girl looked at her and... was defenseless. She actually really heard how much her mother cares. It's what came through the wires. She turned to her mother and smiled, and it just changed everything. It gave us a starting point that gave us a chance to make a dent in the equation. And this mom went on, in my humble opinion, to be an extraordinary mother. whereas she had been accused of being far less than extraordinary all these years. You know, you got a kid who's been hospitalized, you know, the world looks at you like you're, like, horrific. But the truth is, she was just trying as hard as she could with methods that had no chance, that celebrated non-greatness.
I really hope that people listening to this show are really going to get the idea that approaching children by finding everything that's wrong with them is totally the wrong track. You know, the parents come to see me, they've got 20-page psychological analyses of their kids, how their executive functioning is off, their impulse control is off, or this or that, or whatever the latest fad psychological description
is. Who writes those
reports,
Peter?
Huh?
Who writes those reports?
People who, you know, get
a belief in pathology.
Yeah, and get a few bucks an hour to do it and don't know what else to do. It's a sad thing. I tell the parents, the only kind of report I want to read about your child is one that begins with, Jane has wonderful qualities. We spent a fabulous hour together. We talked about all kinds of interesting things. Let me suggest that you really give her the opportunity to express all of her, as you would say, greatness, all of her abilities. Here's some suggestions for what you might do to do that. And it's so important because kids don't grow up to succeed because they're lacking in faults or because all of their edges have been rounded. They succeed because they got a couple of passions that they devote themselves to in a responsible way.
Yeah, and if kids wind up getting recognition for their bad choices, you know, that becomes their trophy. You know, it's their and it's what goes on the mantelpiece. It's what becomes their portfolio. And you know, this applies. I could hear people thinking, well, what about like the really, 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 really tough kids? You know, it doesn't take long for them to melt. You know, ice is ice, and ice melts at a certain temperature. And it might be a bigger block of ice, but it's still going to melt when you kind of put the heat on in this alternative way. And I've never seen the beauty of the normal, the problem for parents and teachers is that pretty much all the conventional, normal, traditional models are wired in this upside down fashion. I'll give you another example if you like examples. So I'm setting up to do a presentation, and it's for teachers in a in-service format after school. And I'm shown to where my presentation's going to be, and I get there an hour early because I'm setting up equipment, and I'm getting myself ready. And I arrive. They show me to the library, and there's this warm, fuzzy part of the library for faculty, and then there's this larger part that's where the books are and the tables for kids and et cetera. And when I get there, there's class, last class of the day going on. And everybody's doing their thing, working at tables, somewhat individually, but a little bit collaboratively. They're clearly involved. And there's a couple of teacher librarians in the front of the room at their desk doing their own thing. It looks like a pretty picture, and it's all quiet. And I go about my business, and 10 minutes later, there is something, no big deal, but the teacher automatically moves over to this kid, and you know, and I look over because I see that happening, and it's clearly a kind, loving teacher. You know the look of a kind, loving person, and in a kind and loving way, she makes her way over to the table. In a kind and loving way, she motions for the child to come hither, and he comes, and she puts her arm around him in a kind and loving way, and she brings him over close to where I'm standing. They don't see me, but I can hear everything they're saying. And in a kind and loving way, she says, Alex, come on, I want you to stay focused. This is the last day for the project. You need to get everything done, and it's the last day for everybody else, so don't distract anybody, blah, 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 blah. She gives him this whole two-minute thing, and then she dismisses him in a kind and loving way, goes back to her table. And you know, You wouldn't believe what happened a few minutes later. You want to take a gasp here?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so a few minutes later, you know, the whole table is disruptive, as well as a few other tables. And it's like, you know, she could be on Madison Avenue doing high-level marketing. You know, the meta message in that classroom is, when you do the right thing, it's silent. You're invisible. Mm-hmm. And dare you be needy or not, you're invisible. And when things go wrong, I'm not only there for you, I'm there in this exquisite way. You could have a tete-a-tete. So everybody then creates this feeding frenzy. They want to get in on it. And that's my interpretation on an energetic level. And so I don't want her to stop being kind and loving, but her timing really sucks.
I think a lot of aggression and a lot of disruption in children is basically saying, me, 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 me.
Exactly.
Look at me. Howard, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
We're listening to Howard Glasser, psychologist of greatness, on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. We'll be back shortly.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network. Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
This is Adam Kolker with Brooklyn Jazz Underground Radio. We'll be here every Tuesday from 5 to 6 with great music, interviews, and live performances. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Again, that's Tuesdays from 5 to 6, or you can listen anytime at the archives at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Allison Rosalie D. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades of studying, talking about, exchanging, and reporting on integrative well-being and collective psychology, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune into Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Peter Bregan,
returning to talk with my friend and extraordinary psychologist, Howard Glasser. We're talking about addressing the great, the good, the marvelous, the wonderful in other people and in ourselves, which may even be a bit more embarrassing. I think that this is so much more than just a surface or glitzy approach. This is about the most profound aspects of human relationship. It's really ultimately about love. It is so deeply sad how many people believe on some level that by saying and doing negative things to other people, something good will come out of it. And in particular, it is misbegotten idea to think that you can get something good and wonderful out of another person by addressing all their negatives and ultimately by abusing them. That doesn't mean there isn't a place for some kind of criticism at times. There's certainly a place for setting limits on children and adults in our lives. I expect children and adults to treat me with respect and hopefully even with kindness and love. But basically, what we really can give people is a love that makes them feel their goodness, their greatness, their capacity to love and to create. Howard, are you there still with me?
I am, Peter, and I love what you're saying. And I just came out with a new book called Notching Up, The Nurtured Heart Approach. One of the little things I tackle is how we can take this tendency to be critical and we could actually use it to be to ramp up this positive if we have an intention to do so. So one of the things I say in this short section is that even among our colleagues, you know, I'm thinking of so many people in education at the moment who say, well, you know, one of the biggest programs in education is called Positive Behavior Intervention Supports, PBIS, and it's in 50,000 schools at least. And they have a ratio of 3 to 1 that if you're going to give a criticism, you got to give 3 positives. Or I don't know what other rationale is, or maybe the other rationale, the flip side, is if you give 3 positives, you're entitled to give 1 criticism, and you can get away with it. And you know, I've met many people along the way and read many things, and the ratio is like, you know, on the low side, 1 to 3, on the high side, 1 to 11, or 1 to 7. Now, how did they get this? Obviously, it's not empirical, because there's such a, you know, a wide range of point of view. So, you know, it can't be based on science. You know, my answer after all these years of exploring this avenue is I don't think there's a need for any criticism. I think we could feel critical and we could convert that into a strategic way of doing what you said, of offering, and I love that you used the word love, you know, offering a loving message that will more ensure will serve our purpose. So if I get a kid who argues, and he's arguing at the moment, I won't look the other way. I'll reset that child. I'll say reset, and I'll turn my being away. You know the expression, save your soul? I want to save my soul for the good stuff. I don't want to give any little portion, any sliver of my soul for the negative anymore. So I turn away, but in the moments that follow, whether it's 3 seconds or 15 seconds later, and that child's not arguing, even if he's just coming up for breath, but the truth is, in that moment, he's not arguing, I'm going to turn to him and I am going to lay it on. Thank you so much for the choice you're making right now not to argue. I know you're upset. I know you have a lot to say, but you're using your power and restraint and control to not argue, and that's a beautiful thing. Congratulations. So I've said the same thing, but I've said it in a constructive way.
And I've said it in a way that celebrates this kid's greatness. And, you know, if I want to put an attachment on that email, I just say, you know, and, you know, that power and that restraint are great qualities I see in you right now. And if the child starts arguing again, I'll just say reset again. You know, so the truth of the moment is so huge here. And I love, again, how you said loving. That is really where, in my humble opinion, it's at. And a lot of people think loving approaches are wussy, you know. But actually, I'm playing hardball. I am fierce. I'm a warrior, and I'm sure you are too. I know this about you, Peter. You know, when we get a tougher kid, we are absolutely at their jugular, but in this alternative way.
Yeah, and the same with adults. When I see that a man is threatening his wife in some way or intimidating his wife in some way, I'll be direct and say, "Well, that's going to stop today. You know, just absolutely stop." But let me tell you about the power you're going to have when you look at this woman with love instead of anger.
Mm-hmm.
When you try to get from her what you want by giving her everything you can, it's going to just change your life forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these principles apply for all ages and all selves and
mm-hmm.
all people. And I think in many ways the more disturbed the human being, the more at the end of their rope the human being, the more that the human being is going to get diagnosed with something awful like schizophrenia or, psychosis,
mm-hmm.
the more that person will not respond well to anything critical or shaming or humiliating, and the more they need the basic support.
I couldn't agree more. That's a profound statement you just made. And I never thought of it that way. You're saying the more closed down they are to anything but positive. And the corollary to that is, and maybe you could explain the higher level of acting out as a more desperate measure of waving the flag in a bigger way, is I need something else. And certainly they're still waving the flag when they are on medication. It doesn't stop them from acting out. So, We know medications might give a momentary impression of improvement, but the problems are still there before the meds kick in, after they wear off. So medications have never cured a problem. And in a way, a cure would only bring somebody back to supposed normal, whatever that is. You know, why not see this flag waving, this acting out, as a opportunity for transformation, as an opportunity. See, I don't want to make the kid's intensity go away, and that's the risk we take when we put them on medication.
Oh, it's not a risk; it's a certainty.
Well, and that's the damn message we send to kids,
yep.
Which is something the hell is wrong with you because of your life force. It scares us. You can't handle it, and we can't handle it. I want to take that same intensity and roll it into here's you being great. Here's you being intensely great. These kids become the best and the brightest. They might look stupid because they've had their intelligence stuck in negativity, but they actually are, in my humble opinion, not only smarter than the average bear, but they're their extraordinary life force, when it's converted to greatness, so to speak, is just fun to be around.
Oh yeah, I mean these are kids that they haven't learned who they really are. They haven't learned that they really can think and that the feelings they have, they can learn to manage and direct more positively. And so they're just flailing about and getting in trouble, and that's their way of finding greatness. The greatness for the injured child is I got a reaction out of mom, dad, and the teachers. That's my greatness.
Yeah.
And you can teach kids that there's a better way to be great than showing you can make the people around you miserable and take notice.
I totally agree. And for me, the way through is not in pep talks. For me, the problem in going up to that kid and saying, you know, you could do it, I know you could make a good decision, energetically it's the same dilemma, because I'm basically saying, apparently, you're not doing it now, as opposed to saying, here you are right now making this great decision. Here you are now using good judgment. Here you are now being wise and helpful. It's not a question of whether you can or can't. You are. And to me, that that creates a little more momentum, and it
yeah.
It's a little more empowering.
Almost every child that's ever come into my office, with maybe two or three exceptions in 30 years, has calmed down, become attentive, and engaged me in a meaningful way. And it's so good to be able to immediately say to the child and the parents, look, you've been in this stressful situation. You're meeting a stranger. I'm a psychiatrist. Goodness knows what you're afraid of. And look at this incredible conversation we're having.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ability you have, and this is who you really, really are.
Mm-hmm.
And just let's run with it. Let's make that more and more who you are.
Well, you know, Peter, you've really worked hard on who you are, and it so comes through in your voice, in your tenure. It's almost like you've let yourself soften as a human being, and your humanity then is accessible, and it speaks to another person's humanity. And you know, I could see where, when you said that, where as a kid I would feel immediately safe with you, and immediately not threatened, and immediately engaged, as you said.
Well, I had to work. I did have to work really, really hard to get to the place that I gradually have come to be in, and continue, I hope, to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came out of childhood with a lot of the macho, competitive, angry, frustrated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
I never would have known that.
Oh God, yes. I could be ferocious when I was a kid. I felt that my life depended on my being really, really tough and strong and determined. And I've really had to learn that there's such a better way to be safe, that you're so much safer and you're so much more able when you create loving relationships than when you create turmoil or conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a road for me. And as you know, my wife Ginger, who didn't come along till my 40s, that we actually got to be together, you know,
mm-hmm.
played a big role in the way I am.
In the
now.
Softening.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful. I really am loving hearing that. I can only hope, too, that as much as you can enjoy that softening in terms of your loving relationships, that you can call up your ferocity when you need to.
I had to do that recently. When Ginger and I determined to leave my old organization and
mm-hmm.
build a whole new one. And that required an enormous amount of confrontation, but I tried at all times to keep it ethical, keep it honest, and then ultimately to say, this is not what it's about. What it's about is getting on and building a new organization.
Yeah, it became an opportunity, didn't it?
It's a total opportunity. Absolutely.
I'm so glad that's evolved that way and moved on. And I think it's such a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. So tell me, tell us, Howard, how people can get in touch with you.
Okay. It's Howard Glasser. And I'm sure you could find me on a Google search. And my main website is called difficultchild.com. The full title is Transforming the Difficult Child, but it's the URL is difficultchild.com. And
the title of your latest book is?
The title of the latest book is Notching Up the Nurtured Heart Approach.
Can they get that on Amazon, Notching Up the Nurtured Heart?
They absolutely can. If you look up Howard Glasser on Amazon, you'll see every last book that I've written. I've now authored 8 books. I'm edging up to where Peter Bragan is.
Oh, no, you're not close yet.
You got 16?
No, I'm over 20.
Oh, Forget it. I'm not going to do it.
See,
every time I see
that
a
old
new
competitive
book,
guy,
I say, I'm never going to write another book again.
That old competitive guy can still come out, Howard. Now, one of the things that interests me the most is how you've managed to get out in the world so much. You are teaching all over the country. You're transforming schools. Tell us a little bit in the minutes we have.
Okay.
Just how you've organized yourself and what people can turn to you for if they want to get in touch with you.
You know, I feel like it's kind of unfolded in front of me is like when my clinic closed 10 years ago, I had been kind of shown the way to do a couple of seminars here and there, but I was a busy guy and I didn't have much time for that. But when I changed gears and changed my life to not being a director of a clinic, I started creating events, one-day seminars where I get to teach my work. And for 10 years now, I've been traveling and 20 to 30 times a year and giving these talks. And at difficultchild.com, you could also see the schedule. I am going to be on the East Coast and the West Coast in the coming couple of months. And but some of those people get really excited. You know, my journey is to, you know, try and inspire people to thinking in this alternative way we've been talking about today. And some of those people in attendance decide that this is the way they want to work with kids. And, you know, they could go ahead and start that day, but some people want to dive in deeper and take advanced training. And I think to answer your question, the reason my work is spread so is that it's these advanced trainers who go back to their world and they start seeing where it goes for them. So the city of Fargo, North Dakota, you know, of all places, you know, is a city that's really becoming Nurtured Heart. And I went there a year ago now to do a parent night. I thought, well, you know, parent nights, 50 people show up, 100 people, maybe if you're lucky. They had almost 800 people in the room.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. But some places just, you know, they have more connectedness. They have better networking. But that's an example of, you know, so my work in England has really taken off. I was just in Manchester, UK, where there's a group of people who are taking Nurtured Heart. They say their expression is one street at a time. They are ferociously marketing for their own purposes. They believe in the approach. They've seen it make a difference, and they're trying to get it into schools, into everything. So it's really not me, Peter, in the long run. I'm not in the trenches at all. It's these amazing people who come along, like, you know, Wendy Pekimini. You know, maybe she's listening today, and maybe she's a guest in some future date. She's this incredible woman in Syracuse who's along with Michael Gilbert, who's probably been a guest, and they are. This has become a large part of their life. Wendy's written a book on Nurtured Heart Approach in Christianity from a biblical perspective. She's authored a couple of kids' books, and she goes around to church groups and to community groups and schools and tells everybody about this. And as does Michael Gilbert. So
Michael and Wendy are both friends of mine too, and they will both be presenting workshops, breakout workshops at the conference, April 8th through 10th in Syracuse, which, to remind everybody, you can get to at empathictherapy.org. And Wendy worked with me as an analyst in a new training film. I've done my first training film on how to do therapy, and I used volunteers, and I asked Wendy to be there to critique on the film what I was doing. And at the conference on the Saturday night after desserts, we're going to show a portion of the training film, one of the sessions in the training film, and Wendy will be there Saturday evening to critique it.
That is so great.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be very interesting to see what you think of what I'm doing.
Okay.
Which certainly has an aspect of what you're talking about, but which is, got a lot of other things also going on in the way I do therapy. And it'll be fun to have you come and comment on on what you see me doing.
Okay.
It's going to be a marvelous, marvelous conference, and I'm just really excited about all the good people.
I just made my plane tickets today, so as you can imagine, I love that moment when it starts taking shape and I have like all my arrangements made.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we haven't said much about psychiatric drugs, and especially for kids. You know that I've devoted a lot of my life and many books to criticizing the psychiatric diagnosis and medicating of children. And I know that you're critical of it. How critical are you, Howard, and how have you gotten to be critical?
You know, I come at it from the other side. You know, when I had a clinic, we were, it was imperative meaning it was mandated, that we have a child psychiatrist on our staff. And, you know, I was indoctrinated like everybody else. You know, that's the thing about growing up in the a world of psychology. It's medical model, and you know, you believe in symptoms. You believe that symptoms lead to diagnosis, pathology. You see pathology, you talk pathology, and then you're ethically bound to see that they lead to what's considered to be, you know, top of the line or, you know, first rung interventions, which, you know, in this current strange world we live in is still medication because of the politics primarily of that. And it's certainly not the proof and the evidence. And where I came into being against medication and strongly against medication is that as I developed this approach, or as it developed me, I got to see that these very same kids who I got to see either before they were on meds or after they were on meds, but the ones I saw before meds were certainly candidates for meds and would have been put on it had I not begun lobbying for, hey, let me work with them for a month before we have that evaluation.
Howard, 20 seconds to sum up.
Okay, so I got to see that these kids emerged as great without medication, so that gave me a voice. I started fighting for that. I wrote a book called 101 Reasons to Avoid Ritalin Like the Plague, and that's how I met Peter Bragan.
All right. You've been listening to Howard Glasser, The Nurtured Heart Approach. You can Google him at Nurtured Heart Approach or Howard Glasser. You can meet him and hear him, along with two or three very closely related colleagues, at the conference April 8th, 9th, and 10th in Syracuse. But you'll meet a lot of other viewpoints, psychiatrists really from around the world, and psychologists and counselors. What we all have in common is what I call empathic therapy or an empathic viewpoint. We all start with caring more about that other person than ourselves when we're trying to help. Thanks a lot for listening.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bragan and his lifelong reform work on www.bragan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.